Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Fundamental Principle. With me today, your host Jerome, is the esteemed guest, Dr. Michael Hill. Dr. Hill is a former professor, former head of the League of the South, and presently the president of the Southern Nationalist League. Am I correct, sir?
That is correct, sir.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hill, for joining us. You've been a hero of mine for many, many years. And I've been a longtime admirer of many of the same men you admire, including Stonewall Jackson's chaplain, Robert Louis Dabney, which is one of the men we're here to talk about tonight. And that is that to the extent that America has organic thinkers that are considered important, they're usually Southern, and they're usually reactionaries. John C. Calhoun's the only political theorist that Americans exported that anyone else takes seriously anywhere in the world. Carl Schmitt would constantly quote Calhoun. Theologians, if they weren't just outright heretics, like a lot of the New England types who just denied core tenets of the Christian faith, like the resurrection or the crucifixion, then they're usually Southern Presbyterians, and that's who we're here to talk about tonight, is James Henley Thornwell and Robert Louis Dabney. If you could give us a brief introduction about yourself, sir, and then introduce those two great thinkers for us, I'd be obliged.
Well, thank you for the kind words, and thank you for having me on today. I must admit that I'm not a pastor or a real professional theologian, I guess you might say. I'm just a layman who has taken an interest over the years in the subject of theology. And I was actually raised in the Methodist Church, United Methodist Church. And the good thing about that was I didn't learn anything much. I had to unlearn. I just didn't learn anything. But shortly after I started the league, I came into contact with some Presbyterian ministers, now some of whom obviously joined the league and had an influence on me. And I became a Presbyterian and started studying the Reformed faith and Reformed theology. And I realized early on that, men like Stonewall Jackson and his probably favorite pastor, I would say, I think the greatest theologian America has produced is Robert Louis Dabney, who also was a Confederate soldier. And you also mentioned James Henley Thornwell, who I think has one of the greatest quotes out there. I think we'll probably get to it before we finish our discussion today. But my background in Reformed theology as a Southern Presbyterian is probably about 30 years in running here. I'm not a member of a Presbyterian church anymore because the one that I joined here when I moved here to North Alabama about a little over 20 years ago, I moved back here. This is where my family's from. We joined a local Presbyterian church that was founded, I guess, in the 1820s, I think it was, and had a sterling reputation as a conservative church. And I left about 6 or 7 years ago after they wanted me to start proselytizing Muslims from the local college in my home. And I told them I had no interest in doing that. I had no interest in being part of a church that advocated that. I think what's happened to the Southern Presbyterian Church is what's happening to most Protestant denominations today. They've been dragged into the woke zone, and they're indistinguishable from the culture around them. So I worship at home now, but I'm still Reformed in my theology. And I still enjoy reading Reformed authors, certainly like Dabney and Thornwell, as you mentioned earlier. But we had a big presence in the League of the South from Reformed members. I mean, I always made clear that we weren't the church, and we didn't support any particular branch of the Christian faith. But many of us were Reformed, and we have a lot of Roman Catholics. We have some Eastern Orthodox, and among Protestants, we have Independent Baptists and Presbyterians and Reformed Episcopalians and things such as that. We've always
all
tried
genuine
to.
believers.
All genuine believers.
Right,
Yeah,
you just
exactly.
named traditional Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, Reform, confessional Anglicans. You just named all the branches of the Christian Church that are actually still believing Christians. The United Methodist Church, a significant chunk of the non-traditional Catholic faith. They're all apostate. This is the thing that one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is that. Our audience is primarily composed of traditional Catholics, such as Mark Tomey, but the devil has used the same playbook. He only really has one playbook to destroy not only the Roman Catholic Church, but the United Methodist Church, the Presbyterian churches. There's just not any safe harbor where you can go. Okay, these guys are right, and they don't. The Southern Baptist Convention, removed James Edwards and his entire for believing what every Southern Baptist believed until yesterday.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I'm good friends with James. I'm certainly aware of the situation there. And I have been denied membership before in a Presbyterian church and. Oh, actually, more than one, because of what I was doing with the League of the South at the time. So, I think you're absolutely right. The devil has assaulted the entire Christian faith, and I think one of the ways that he has done that is he's put this Jewish influence into the Christian mix, largely by doing things like publishing the Scofield Bible.
Yep.
A little over 100 years ago and advocating that be used in Christian churches, Protestant churches, and also infiltrating the seminaries where the priests and preachers are trained.
Yep.
And
are you familiar
why should
the story of Bella Dodd, Dr. Hill?
Who now?
Bella Dodd. Does that name ring any bells for you, sir?
I'm not sure. Why don't refresh my memory about that?
So Bella Dodd was a communist in the early 20th century, Italian immigrants. She infiltrated. She herself says, and she was brought back to the Christian faith by Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen and Bishop Fulton Sheen, who was one of the better churchmen in America in the 20th century.
Right.
And she herself says that she infiltrated communists and homosexuals into all the seminaries in the Roman Catholic Church. Hundreds of them.
Wow.
So it's
wow.
Not, so your sense is, of course, completely correct. And and that's what they've done, objectively. And
I know that what. One of the big seminaries for the Presbyterian Church at one time was in Jackson, Mississippi. And that's where a lot of the Presbyterian ministers that I knew in my earlier days, that's where many of them received their training. And that place has done a 180, as they say. It's not turning out men like I knew in my younger days. It's turning out out and out communist today to go into what many people still think is the most conservative branch of the Protestant church in the South in particular, which is a joke now. I mean, I wouldn't I have younger guys that will ask me from time to time about what church they can go to. I said, just like when they asked me about what college they can go to, I said, I have none to recommend. I recommend that instead of going to some den of iniquity like most of these churches are, that you worship at home with your family, or you find some friends who are like-minded to worship with. Because I wouldn't darken the door of one of these new churches today because of the caliber of the preachers that are going to be there to shepherd you along and shepherd you down the road to hell.
That's right. And this is not a new conflict. I'm going to give you a quote. I'm sure you know it, of course, Dr. Hill, but for the edification of our listeners, this is what wisdom will give you. The James Henley Thornwell said in, I believe, 1863, or no, 1859, quote, "The parties to this conflict are not merely abolitionists and slaveholders. They're atheists, socialists, communists, red Republicans, Jacobins on one side, and the friends of order and regulated freedom on the other. In one word, the world is the battleground. Christianity and atheism are the combatants, and the progress of humanity is at stake," unquote. So that was 175 years ago, and it's 100% true today.
I wish I had a nickel for every time I'd use that quote in one of my speeches over the last 30 years.
Oh, it's a banger, as the kids say.
That is very, very prescient. He knew exactly what he was talking about. And, you know, subsequent events have proved that he was absolutely right.
Amen. Well, and I think that the thing that people need to understand here is that inherent in the theology of modernism, and if you haven't read Pope Pius X's landmark encyclical Pacienti Domini Gregis, it's on the Vatican website. I strongly urge you to read it because it's a destruction of modernism as such, and it's from like 1903. Anyway, the Pope Pius X, who was I think one of the last great Roman Catholic popes, called modernism the synthesis of all heresies. And what we have here, right, is effectively just a hodgepodge of bad ideas whose only sole animating thread is hatred of the gospel and hatred of white Christian Europe. You know?
Yeah.
That's
exactly right.
And the people who would advocate for, you know, go evangelize the Muslims, why are there Muslims in Alabama in the first place?
That's the question.
Right. Like, why are they here? They don't, you know, there are Alabama boys that could be doing the engineering that they're doing, that they've been brought here to do.
That's exactly right.
You know, and why? You know, men from Alabama died in Tripoli in the wars with the Barbary pirates to keep Muslims out of America.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that was the main question I asked the session there at the church, the pastor and the elders. Why are these people here in the first place? You know, they didn't really have an answer to that, but they said, well, for whatever reason they're here and we should evangelize them. I said, well, you can evangelize them. I consider them to be an enemy of my people, an enemy of my civilization, and an enemy of my faith. So obviously that letter I wrote to them didn't go over very well, but hey, that's fine.
But that's not to put it in those stark terms, is in fact the best thing you can do because it's the people that are not our friends. That it's the traitors that are the biggest problem.
Oh, absolutely. I know how to
wear the cloak of being a solid conservative Christian and a Southerner and whatever. Or Elon Musk has gone pretty mask off the last couple of days. That he's just a resentful man who doesn't care about America at all, and he just wants to flood the United States with. We're recording this on December 28th for those interested, and Elon Musk has gone full mask off on Twitter talking about how we need to flood the United States with, you know, millions and millions of Indian tech workers. And white American men invented technology.
Yeah, absolutely. If these Indians are so damn smart, why aren't they over there building a rival to the United States in India on the Indian subcontinent? They're not, because they're not capable of doing that. If they were capable of doing it, they would have done it already. So what are they doing over here? They're coming over here to make money. That's it. They don't give a damn about our culture, our civilization, our faith, or anything else.
Right.
So they're parasites. They're parasites being brought in by parasites.
That's exactly correct. And forgive me the lengthy quote, but I can't resist. This is my favorite quote of all time with respect to conservatives. This is Robert Louis Stanton.
Must be Dabney.
Yes, sir, it is.
I knew it. I knew
this
it.
This is Robert Louis Dabney, who died in 1898, shortly before his death, talking about the mania that certain northern folks had for women's suffrage. It may be inferred, again, that the present movement for women's rights will certainly prevail from the history of its only opponent, northern conservatism. This is a party which never conserves anything. Its history has been that it demurs to each aggression of the Progressive Party and aims to save its credit by a respectable amount of growling, but always acquiesces at last in the invasion, which is this resisted novelty of yesterday, is today one of the accepted principles of conservatism. It is now conservative only in affecting to resist the next innovation, which will tomorrow be forced upon its timidity and will be succeeded by some third revolution to be denounced and then adopted in its turn. American conservatism is merely the shadow that follows radicalism as it moves forward towards perdition. It remains behind it, but never retards it, and always advances near its leader. Its impetus is not hard indeed to explain. It is worthless because it is the conservatism of expediency only and not of sturdy principle. It intends to risk nothing serious for the sake of the truth and has no idea of being guilty of the folly of martyrdom. It always, when about to enter a protest, very blandly informs the wild beast whose path it essays to stop that its, quote, bark is worth it its bite, unquote. It only means to save its manners by enacting its decent role of resistance. The only practical purpose which now serves in American politics is to give enough exercise to radicalism to keep it in wind, to prevent it from becoming pursy and lazy, from having nothing to whip. No doubt, after a few years, when women's suffrage shall have become accomplished in fact, conservatism will tacitly admit it into its creed and thenceforth plume itself upon its wise firmness in opposing, with similar weapons, the extreme of baby suffrage. And when it too shall have been won, it will be heard declaring that the integrity of the American Constitution requires at least the refusal of suffrage to asses. There it will assume with great dignity its final position. 1897.
Wow.
I mean,
what an observation.
I mean, that could have been written yesterday.
It could have been, yeah, absolutely. It could have been written yesterday. Yeah, that's a magnificent quote from Dabney. It's absolutely true. Conservatism, I guess you might call it mainstream conservatism, has never really conserved anything. All it does is just, as Dabney said, follow along behind liberalism, putting the stamp of approval on what liberalism has laid down for us.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Today, yeah, and you look today. I'm so old fashioned that I don't even believe women should vote or hold office. And I don't mind saying that publicly, and I've said it many times, and I don't care how many women don't like it. It's absolutely true.
And I've said it myself. But go ahead.
But, you know, how long did it take Republicans as conservatives to say, you look around today and most of the candidates that I see are females. It's like they've just kind of taken over as running for office and getting elected to office.
Right.
You know, the homosexual issue, you know, back in the 60s, all the Republican conservatives were against that. Now they acknowledge it. openly that oh, we got nothing against homosexuals, you know. So Dabney was exactly right. Every perversity that the left puts forward, you can guarantee that within a generation, the conservatives are going to be supporting it as well, while the left has moved on to its latest
conservative case for transgender rights, which is something was a joke 20 years ago, something the National Review actually published. Right. Well, of course, you and I both know that Bill Buckley was a CIA man, a Project Mockingbird man. But most
absolutely he was.
You know, probably homosexual.
I met him. Yeah, I met him one time. I think he was a homosexual. He certainly acted like one. I had to go wash my hands after I shook hands with him. I met him once, and I thought he was absolutely as fake a conservative as I've ever seen. And I was much younger than I am now, less wise. But I could tell that this man is not what he is portrayed to be.
No. And to kind of bring it back around to the theology question, right? So America can't function without a functioning low church. I'm a Scots-Irish hillbilly.
Yeah, me too.
And I love our people. But we love that devil rum. And
yes, we do.
And you just, without some kind of guidance from God, you see the dissolution and just degeneration of a people. And you see it in the opioids, you see it in the single parenthood, you see it in the the broken marriages, you see it all over the place in white America. And it's because for a lot of them, that they're too addicted to freedom. They don't understand it. I think that they need to understand, they need to come back to the high church. But until, you know, the church has got to meet them where they're at and explain to them in terms that they can understand. And, you know, without a functioning low church, there's just nothing to reach these lost souls out there that they need a source of wisdom and stability in their lives. You know, one of the things
go ahead, sir. The church should provide that, but it doesn't. I'm sorry for interrupting you there.
No, you're perfectly right that it doesn't. Why? I'm in my mid-40s now. You were a professor for many years. How many solidly intelligent white boys did you see going through college that had their potential destroyed by drugs? I've seen an entire age cohort of men my age get addicted to this highly, highly potent THC-laced marijuana, and it just blew their brains out. I mean, they're functioning. They exist. But, you know, the bright guy who was going to take over the world at 22 or, you know, 19 or 20, by the time he's 26, is just, you know, he's got a brain like Swiss cheese.
I've seen that among my own friends and my colleagues, and it's a sad, sad situation to see. You know, you mentioned being a Scots-Irish hillbilly. We God created us with a lot of energy and a lot of verve, I guess you might say, vitality. We latch on to things like the demon rum or down here in the South, moonshine, white lightning, whatever. We latch on to things like that, and we tend to abuse them. I've had problems like that in my life. I've undergone stuff where I've had to simply, by the grace of God, lay it aside. And thank God I was able to, because I have seen many, many of my colleagues, young men my age when I was in my 20s and 30s, fall by the wayside. Some of them actually die from this sort of abuse. And had there been a really reliable low church, as you mentioned, to give these men guidance and support, I think their lives would have turned out to have been much longer and much better. But we didn't have that. That was disappearing, even as I was a younger man. But it certainly has disappeared today. And I feel so bad for this young generation of Southern men who are coming up, because they have absolutely nowhere to turn for outside of their, you know, their own family, or maybe some older Southerners who have managed to keep their heads together during all this. They have nowhere to turn for guidance. The church is not there for them. The church absolutely despises them because they're white males, particularly traditional white males. They have no help from government.
No.
There's no net for which to catch them if they fall.
No, and I've made this point, I think, but I certainly agree with you with what you just said. But it's worth noting that, you know, these young white men are the one, they're asked to pay for a Social Security system they're never going to see. They're asked to pay for taxes, you know, exorbitant taxes if they are successful, right? Exorbitant taxes to go to feed other people's children, and their women have been told, you know, not to have children and not to get married, and they can't find a spouse to save their lives, even though they've got it together and they're you know, but the church not only has failed these young men, you know, without fighting myself too much, or you know, I'm fairly odd. Because I was into, you know, radical politics at a fairly young age, and I followed it closely for 20 years. You shouldn't have to be, you know, I mean, people should go to the Southern Nationalist League website, but you shouldn't have to fall down the rabbit hole of, like, you know, weird 19th century Reformed theology in order to not destroy your life. You know, normal people should be able to be normal and still be successful. You shouldn't
absolutely
have to. You know, and I am a nationalist. I am an identitarian. I am someone who believes that white countries for white people, and you know, that non-Christians shouldn't hold office in America. Women shouldn't hold. I have all the, you know, you name an out there belief, and I got it. I don't have a problem with that. That's not the issue. It's just, you shouldn't have to have esoteric ideological motivation in order to live a functioning life. And that's unfortunately where we're at right now, is, you know, only the people who have these frankly very odd, out of step views are able to make sense of the world.
That is absolutely true. In order to make sense of the world, you have to dig and put the materials together, or put the pieces of the jigsaw together, puzzle together to see reality. And that's a hard thing for most people to do. And you're not going to have any help doing it, that's for sure. You know, not only has the church abandoned us, but we've lost control of our educational system, as it were, particularly the colleges. You know, you mentioned that I taught for a while. I taught for 20 years at the University of Alabama. And I saw the decline there. The decline, on the one hand, of of what the churches were supposed to be doing, and the decline of the educational system not doing what it was supposed to be doing for these kids that came in and put themselves in front of us and expected to get something worthwhile out of it. I tried my best to teach these kids what I thought they needed to know, and I think some of them appreciated that. But most of my colleagues didn't. Most of my colleagues were not Southerners, and most of my colleagues were anything but Christians and conservatives of any stripe. So yeah, and it was, you know, I'm talking about the 1980s and 1990s here when I was teaching, and I can only imagine how bad it is among them today there, because I don't have any contact with the educational system or the churches anymore. So I've kind of divorced myself from both of those, and as because they have nothing to offer me at my advanced age. I know they don't have anything to offer a young white man in his early 20s.
No, of course
so
not.
So I'm,
you know, you spoke about the educational system there for a second. You know, one of the reasons all these foreign engineers are being imported is, you know, American young boys what they were taught in this gynocentric, you know, be a good girl and sit still school program, and they weren't challenged at all. You know, if you know, the Catholic doctrine of purgatory is a place where you suffer and you wait. And the closest thing I can think of to purgatory on earth is to be a young white boy in American public schools surrounded by non-whites with a non-white woman teacher on a nice day in May.
Oh, man.
You know, you just want to talk about just suffering, right? Because, you know, this, we have this egalitarian nonsense that is found nowhere in the scriptures. Nowhere in the scriptures supports equality. Nowhere in the history of the church supports equality. Nowhere in the history of Western thought supports equality. Anywhere. The levelers and the diggers were rightfully condemned as heretics, you know, 400 years ago. But if, you know, someone had the horsepower, the mental acuity to be, you know, to understand higher mathematics, calculus, differential equations, and he just wasn't allowed to progress that far because the school system was too busy trying to get, you know, semi-literate 87 IQ Negroes to the point where they could pretend to pass a, you know, a fourth grade reading exam in seventh grade, then there just wasn't the resources for the bright kids. And this is, you know, this is that heresy. This is why the religious stuff matters. Because ultimately, you know, there's no such thing as a secular society. I keep repeating this almost every show we do, but it's important to repeat. You know, whatever your religion is what you spend most of your, like, whatever you believe in. And our anti-racist, egalitarian society has the religion of hell. Only in hell is everyone equal. You know,
that's exactly right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Bible tells us that heaven has grades like that. And I think that it was Dante that talked about the different circles of hell, but that's not biblical. Yeah, hell is where there's equality. Certainly, our Christian heritage has never propped up any such fallacy as the equality, as Reverend Dabney called it, the mechanical equality of all men. And that is, if you have that as your starting point, then you can't go anywhere good. And the church, having adopted that, has relegated itself to going down a path that is unsustainable and a path that is going to lead to perdition. And I think we're already seeing the results of that today.
Oh, of course, yeah. And where, you know, one of the things that a functioning church imposes on capable people, right, is an obligation, both up and down.
Yeah, that's right, up and down.
That you have been given particular gifts by God, and it's your duty to work on those gifts and to hone those gifts to best serve your fellow man in the kingdom. So you can't be, you know, a wake and bake guy. You can't be, you know, can't be drinking too much. You can't be, you know, damaging yourself and damaging your society by destroying yourself. But, you know, if you're the quickest horse in the barn, you're to exercise those abilities in service to, you know, the common good. But you're also to have patience and grace for those that are not as quick as you are.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And another thing I think that we make a mistake in assuming is that these things are applied universally. I don't believe in universalism when I think about Christianity. Other than the fact that you know, God controls his entire creation and Christ will be Lord over everything that God has given him, which is everything. But that doesn't mean that these are all God's people out here. And I believe that those gifts that we've been given are not to be used in service necessarily of humanity in general, but to be used first and foremost in the service of our our families, our
Peace to men of
nuclear
goodwill.
family, and others among our people who are of goodwill. And I think that one of the things that turns so many people off about the church today is, and this is just the other side of the anti-white coin, is this, you know, all men are brothers and all people are equal. And when you do that, you're basically saying, well, there's nothing special about Christianity. It's just another one of the world's religions. Obviously, if you're, as long as you're, if you're a true Christian, obviously you don't believe that. You don't believe all of the platitudes that go along with it, like all men are brothers and all men are equal and all cultures are equal and civilizations are equal and all that kind of stuff. Nor are your obligations to be equally applied among all men. I think it's in 1 Timothy that says that, you know, the man who doesn't take care of his own house is worse than an infidel.
That is correct.
And I think that's practical. I don't think that that's some kind of philosophical statement. I think that's a practical statement that we are to see to our own before we worry about anybody else.
The scriptures say, you know, you go to these people more than once, and if they keep rejecting you, to, you know, symbolically shake the dust from your feet and leave. The Thomas
Absolutely.
Christians, you know, Thomas the Apostle went to India. He made it all the way to India. There was a small remnant there when the Jesuits arrived in the 16th century. And Saint Francis Xavier is buried in Goa, which is a little, you know, Christian Catholic enclave on the west coast of India. And but you know, for the vast majority of the people of the subcontinent, they, like the Jews, they have rejected our Lord.
Absolutely.
And you know, that carries consequences. You have been given the offer of eternal life and you have said no thank you. Well, okay. You know, the terrible thing about God's justice is he'll give you what you ask for.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of people don't realize that when you talk about God's justice, in large part, you're talking about the wrath that he will show to unbelievers. And there's going to be plenty of that stored up.
Well, sure. And not only in 1917... the Virgin Mary appeared to some children in Portugal. Famously, it's called Our Lady of Fatima. And one of the visions
I'm very much aware of that.
One of the visions the children had was souls falling to hell like snow in a blizzard. Now, I don't know if you've ever been up north, Dr. Hill, during a blizzard, but it's
I hope.
But it's quite something to see. And if you think about souls falling to hell like that, it should terrify you in the original sense of the word. It should be something that particularly as a father and as a someone who's responsible, right? You know, as someone who's a leader in whatever capacity, you know, God has seen to make you a leader, that should bother you to the bottom of your bones.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely,
that's the thing that we have in our societies. We have, you know, not only do we have this, our leadership has no sense of obligation down, and then our education system, such as it could be called, creates nothing but resentment on the way up. You know, so if, you know, you've dealt with American Negroes of all stripes and social classes for decades, the only ones that I can say are, you know, reasonably happy and functional are the ones that say, you know, I am what I am, and I don't hate white people because I'm not particularly bright. I just work my, you know, menial service job, and I love Jesus, and I try and do the best I can, right? But if you know, you're told, and this is what the problem with so many Indians coming to the United States is, and it hasn't worked with America, you know, our own native underclass in the Negro population. If you're told that the only reason that you don't have, you know, a 10 out of 10 redheaded girlfriend with blue or green eyes is racism, then you're just going to hate everyone above you because you don't know, right? If you can't honestly evaluate yourself and you're at the bottom end of things, just because God's gifts work that way and you're not particularly bright or you're not particularly whatever, you're not tall, you're not handsome, whatever deficiency you might have. But if you're not allowed to be honest about those deficiencies, then you know you're gonna have some real resentment built up, and you have these, you know, 5'7" skinny Indian dudes who come across to America and just relentlessly sexually harass white women because they've been told through pornography and Jewish media that they deserve, you know, a 10 out of 10, you know, blonde girlfriend. And it's like, no, dude, look, I don't think women should vote. I think feminism has been a disaster. But let's be honest here. Everyone knows, including the girls themselves, like, if you're a 5'10" blonde gal who's in a sorority at University of Mississippi or University of Alabama, you know that you're the top of the heap. Like yep. Those girls know that every dude in the world would chop off his left hand.
Of right? course I do.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, this plague of unrealistic expectations that a lot of these groups have is, you know, it's fostered by the culture that we have today. It's fostered by the educational system. It's fostered by the churches. You know, I think you hit on something earlier, although you didn't call it by the name I'm about to use, but it's one of the things that I think we're missing in today's world. And that's a sense of noblesse oblige on the part of those that God has favored, whether he's favored them physically or mentally or whatever with gifts. I don't think we have enough of those people who look down and say to their brothers and sisters beneath them, let me help you up. Let me help pull you up. So what we have is we have governments who are looking at other groups, like these Indians that you're talking about or various other non-whites who come to this country, and they are very much willing to exercise that sort of helping hand, noblesse oblige to these people who ought not be here in the first place. So how do you counter something like that? Obviously, what you want to do is you want your government to serve the people that it's supposed to serve, and you want your church to do the same. You want your educational system and all your institutions to do that. But all of our institutions are too busy today helping the wrong people. You know, I've often said to people who say that, well, you know, America's built by immigrants and America's a melting pot. And, you know, we should celebrate our differences and all racial differences and ethnic and cultural differences and all, because that's what America is supposed to be about. No, that's exactly the opposite. I mean, for example, how many of your listeners out there have ever heard of the name Israel Zangwill? He was the man who coined the term the melting pot for America, and I think it was somewhere around 1907, 1908, a little over 100 years ago.
Mr. Zangwill's ancestors were not on the Mayflower or in
Jamestown. No, his ancestors were nowhere near the Mayflower.
No.
But anyway, what we've led an alien people and culture into our midst 100-something years ago, and what it has done is fostered the entry into our system of other alien peoples and ideologies until America has become unrecognizable today as the white Northern and Western European country that it was intended to be. And the church and theology has played a great part in undermining that initial perception of America as a place for Europeans, particularly Northern and Western Europeans, and as an extension of Christendom. And until we get back to those things, America is going to continue to plummet into the depths of this abyss. And once it reaches a certain point, I don't believe it's going to be able to be redeemed in any recognizable form. And I think we may have already passed that point. That's why I've been a Southern nationalist for most of my adult life, well, all of my adult life and part of my childhood, thanks to my father, is because I see something in the South and something in our traditional view of Christianity that would be a saving grace, if you will, for at least part of this country. I think part of it's, I have no hope in redeeming California or New England or other parts of the country, which are maybe not as far along on this road to perdition. But I still see something in the South that's redeemable.
Well, it would be a genuine miracle of God for New England to be saved. Let me just put it that way.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's true. That it would be a miracle of God and certainly a gift from
right.
Him. But hey, you know,
there's,
I still believe the Bible.
Radicalism and
apostasy. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
years.
I still believe that God will favor us if we will turn our face back to Him and have Him as our God and pray that He will have us once again as His people. I think that He will keep His promise, but we've yet to do that. And
no,
and
moreover, you can't give what you don't have. And
true.
if there aren't people, you know, in positions of leadership who will do things like say, we need to repent. You know, how many conservative Southern Baptist pastors have women in their congregations who are working and not raising children?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and like, and sometimes that's by necessity, right? But a decent a decent pastor, it says, goes to the legislature and says, you know, legislature, men in, you know, high places, sins that, you know, injustice to the working man is a sin that cries to heaven for vengeance. And if you are arranging the economy such that by the laws that you pass and those that you favor and don't favor, because this is all downstream of power, right? That's the one of the things, you know, the reality that
That's right.
John C. Calhoun talked about is that you know, in any society, those who pay taxes and those who get paid from taxes, and you know, that this idea of the free market or whatever is nonsense, right? So, you know, the pastors need to go to the legislature and say, "Look, you need to arrange things such that a decent man who works hard. We're not saying he needs to drive a Lamborghini and go to the Bahamas on vacation 3 times a year or whatever, but he should be able to." His wife should be able to stay home while his children are small, and he should be able to make a decent enough living that he can head down to, you know, the Floribama coast at least once a year. And
that's
and,
right.
You know, and be able to, you know, and afford a car without going into, you know, ruinous debt. And you know, we talked about it earlier, but you know, the educational system that he pays taxes for, should educate his children sufficiently well that they're able to take full advantage of their potential. Right now, you know, I know you've talked about this in the past, you know, white Christian people cannot send their children to public schools. It's child abuse. They must.
No, absolutely. It's child abuse.
You know, so the law must be changed such that, or the taxes that man pays need to be cut so that he's not obligated at the point on pain of death to support that system. Right.
Our pastors and priests should be the moral leaders of our country. And they should do exactly what you said. They should go to those in positions of political authority, and they should say the things that you just said and many, many more on top of that about the moral state of the country. That is absolutely their job to do that, and they have abdicated that job. They have succumbed to the wokeness, I guess, for whatever reason. I don't think that they have any, I would hope that they don't have any pecuniary gain out of selling out their people by simply kowtowing to the secular, liberal, leftist, communist worldview, but it would seem that they're doing that. This wokeness has infiltrated every single institution, including our churches. And I can't speak with any authority about the Eastern Orthodox or Roman Catholic churches. I can only speak with some authority about the Protestant churches, but the situation in the Protestant churches is absolutely terrible. You don't have anybody, I know a few pastors, I won't say nobody, I know a few who have the guts to stand up and say the things that you just mentioned there about what should be said to our Solons, our political leaders. But, you know, if pastors and priests won't do this and won't be a moral compass for some of the political leadership in the country, who's going to do it? I mean, you're not going to have anybody whispering in the ear of these people who are making legislation and policy.
No.
That we need to be doing X instead of Y, you know. You know, politicians today, I don't think much of the ones that are in office. But they certainly need guidance from people who are steeped well and correctly in God's word. And I just don't see that happening. Therefore I don't have a very positive outlook on the future.
Well, I do insofar as that God is just. And if we do, as you said, and become his people and turn to him, I believe he'll save us. And that both frightens and gives me hope at the same time.
Yeah, it is a frightening thing, but it is a hopeful thing too. But I think that the leadership in doing this is going to have to come from some other area.
That's why I do this. To just use an example, the Church of Woke. You know, Martin Luther King and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, our friends over at Stone Choir, did a couple wonderful episodes about these two particular gentlemen, these two reprobate scoundrels.
That's right.
You know, in the South, you can't talk about the fact that Martin Luther King was an apostate, a communist, a pervert. I mean, like, he was in no, you know, his doctor, you know, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, right? Like, all of that is fake. He's not a reverend because he doesn't believe in the scriptures. He doesn't believe in the resurrection. He doesn't believe in the virgin birth. So he doesn't believe in the creed, so he can't be a reverend. His doctorate was fake. You know, and stolen, plagiarized. So that's fake. And
yeah,
his original name was Michael. So he, you know,
well, that's right. He was also a whoremonger.
Yeah, you know, and the scripture is pretty clear about, you know, whoremongers not inheriting the kingdom of heaven. Beat women, and this is not a man that should be emulated, right?
No, now you and I don't have any problem telling the truth about this, but you know, who are we? I mean, we're not in any positions of moral authority, that is recognized moral authority anyway. So when we say these things, and I know you say them and I say them publicly, but what do we get called? We just get called racist extremists, you know, and even though what we're saying is the God's truth about this man, this miscreant, we're shouted down. We're shouted down by the very people who should be saying Well, let me look into this a little bit closer. What you say there is rather disturbing, sir. Maybe I should look into it before I praise Martin Luther King Jr. again. But no, that doesn't happen because there would be some social or financial price to be paid for taking our position on this. And that's what keeps most of these men from doing what they're supposed to do.
Amen. Well, they have hated him first, so I guess, you know, get in line. Right. But that's the great difficulty in our society. It's why we're not allowed to, you know, there's been a whole new wave of censorship on Twitter, and why they're so desperate. So if I'm a crank, if I'm a crazy person, if you're, you know, a hateful bigot, and you believe what you say you believe in free speech and good ideas drive out bad ideas, all right. You know, let me on, you know, Good Morning Alabama on Sunday morning talk show. And let me make my
case. They wouldn't, you know, yeah, they wouldn't let me anywhere near something like that.
Of course not. But nevertheless, and this is where I find hope, is that, you know, tens of thousands of young people are coming to the conclusions that, you know, you've been talking about for 30 years. You know, more and more people every day are seeing the truth about the Jewish control of our country. You know, and if you don't worship God, your country will be ruled by Jews. Lasivita Kalafa said that in the 19th century, like in 18.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely true.
Right. And if you don't believe, you know, and this notion of equality, right? Like, no, there's always going to be someone in charge. 10 people can organize a society of 300 million people way better than 300 million people can resist a conspiracy of 10 people trying to take them over.
That's right.
And there's no such thing as democracy. I mean, it just doesn't exist. You know?
No, it's democracy is the devil's ideology.
Right, absolutely. Well, and you know, we're to pretend that, you know, your vote counts the same as, forget who's the president of U.S. Steel down in Birmingham, but, you know, right, whoever that is, we're supposed to pretend our votes are the same. It's like, no, this man's been given a position of responsibility and power, and so he has obligations to the people of Birmingham, Alabama.
That's right.
And you know, he should have a pretty wife and a nice car and a big house because he's been given these burdens to bear. And, you know, earthly success is a small recompense for the sort of burdens you bear when you are, you know, the president of U.S. Steel or whatever it is. But those people have also positive obligations to their, you know, to their fellow man. And that's where we're, you know, on us middle-class schlubs, us white working middle people, right? We have this high-low coalition against the middle where the low are told that they have to, that we're keeping them down because of their own natural deficiencies that they've been lied to about. And we're kept, you know, shackled to public schools, shackled to ruinous taxation, shackled to, you know, 3 and 4 hour commutes every day because we, you know, we can't afford the gated community with a private security close to town. So you gotta drive from, you know, if you live in or you work in Atlanta, you've got to drive halfway to Alabama before you find a place where your kids aren't going to get shot when they go to school.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
And so we've been, you know, we're being oppressed by the great and powerful in our society because they fear us replacing them because they know we're capable of it if we were given the opportunity and the chance.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why they would never give us the opportunity or a chance, and that's why democracy is such a scam.
Well, yeah, why? Why should? You know, and they don't have any positive obligations down to us either, and that's the, you know, like, oh, well, we're all equal. So, well, no, we're not. No, we're not.
Well, I think something you said earlier, just a few minutes ago, is extremely important for our people to understand, and that is, If you won't be ruled by God, then you're going to be ruled by Jews. And when you, some people might not know enough of the Bible to realize what that's going to mean. But I always refer people back to the Gospel of John, chapter 8, and particularly verse 44, when Christ himself self-identifies who the Jews are. And that is, you are the children of your father, the devil. And he was a liar and a murderer from the start. Now, you want to be ruled by people like this? Well, that's exactly what's happening. I've said for 30 years that not only has the South, but the whole United States been overtaken by an alien people with an alien ideology. And that's the Jews, of course, and their ideology is anti-Christian at its root. And that's what we've been seeing for the past little over 100 years since they've come here in large enough numbers to take over all the institutions that they've taken over during that 100 years. And now they're making their move to come out in the open and say, we are ruling your country in our interest and not yours. There is, if we had a true ruling class that came organically out of our people, those people in positions of authority would do what's best for the population in general, because it would be in their best interest to see that their fellow Christians, were doing well, because if they were, that would mean the whole country was doing well. Mm-hmm. What's happening now, as you very well know, is we're being ruled by non-Christians, non-whites, who are expropriating the wealth of this country as fast as they can, and are going to leave a hollow shell of opioid addicted or dead rural communities, poor rural communities, and all the wealth is going to be sucked out, and you're just going to have a hollow shell of what once was a great country. And I think we're witnessing the culminating stages of that right now, and what the outcome of it's going to be, I don't know, but God save us from it. That's the only thing I can think of that could save us.
The scriptures are pretty clear. Having foreigners and women rule over you is a curse from God.
Of course. I mean, I think that's in Deuteronomy chapter 28, I believe. God listed all the things that you're going to suffer if you don't follow him as your leader, as the one that you should obey.
Mm-hmm. And not only do... Right. I love women. Women are great. But they're not... The home is not... it's not politics. You can't do politics.
No, the home is, no, right. Absolutely not.
You know, politics is about winners and losers, and someone's got to win, someone's got to lose sometimes, and sometimes people, you know, like bad things happen. Sometimes there's conflicts, and women, naturally, right? God ordained them to be mothers in homes where, you know, if you have three children, you know, everyone gets a third of the piece of the pie. And little Janie and little Sally have to get the same size pie as little Timmy, even though little Timmy is a boy, and he could eat the whole pie by himself if you let him.
Right.
Well, you know, in the world, it's not the home. And, in fact, it is our job as men is to provide for and protect those homes so that those children and women can be protected and flourish. But we're not allowed
That's
to.
That's right.
Anymore. We're not allowed to anymore, you know, to one of your points, you know, 12 men live in a two-bedroom apartment, and it's not illegal. With, you know, 8 junk cars, 7 of which are running at any one time, and that changes, right? They can live in those sorts of ways, and the police won't get called. And if there's kids in the home, the Department of Public, you know, whatever, the CPS won't get called. But if you was to offer a, you know, something similar on a chunk of property you had for 12 young single guys that were, you know, league members, that would be a Southern Nationalist compound.
Exactly. You know,
where you'd get raided by the FBI and it might get burned down with everyone in it.
Well, we've seen that happen before. We certainly have.
Right. So,
yeah, I agree with you, what you were saying about the role of women here. Women should be facing inward, i.e. toward the family, and they should teach their daughters to do the same.
Yeah.
Men's role is to face the outside world as protectors, as participants in the outside world. And it's you know, the two jobs are complementary. A man is going to get weary, battle weary, from all these fights that he has to do, and he needs a good, safe, comfortable place to retreat and, you know, recharge his batteries, as it were. And that's what the women provide with a home. And when women are taken away from this principal activity of theirs, bearing children, raising children, and providing for a home for a family, then you have no place of refuge for a man like that, and society simply crumbles. And until we get back to recognizing this, and this is the biblical way, I mean, this is how God ordained it, we're not going to be blessed. We're not going to have a stable and functioning society if we buy into the tenets of feminism, as the Jews, another one of the plagues that the Jews have pushed upon the Western, white Western Christian population. Extremely unbiblical, and the sooner we give it and all these other bits of foolishness up, then the better off we're going to be. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. But I am a little bit optimistic, because what you said earlier sort of struck a note with me. I see a lot of young people today who are not buying into the old lies about equality and, you know, the state of race relations and the sexual relations between men and women and things like that. They're not buying into the liberal worldview on these things. And to me, that is a very heartening development. I don't know if I'm 73 years old. I don't know if I'll live to see the fruition of this, what it might turn into, but I'm hopeful that it will be something good for my children and grandchildren.
Well, I think that you're right, because I don't know if you've noticed this. I'm, you know, a late Xer, I guess, if you had to peg me generationally, with notable exceptions such as yourself, most baby boomers, they live in a functioning society still, because all of their peers are, you know, been married 40, 50 years, or, you know, they got a divorce once in 1987 and then they married again and have been married to the second wife for 30 years, whatever it is.
Right.
But they have no idea how dysfunctional young people are today. When you tell them, like, hey, like, you know, these young women, they've had their they don't think just, you know, the boy down the street is worth dating, because they've been hit on by men from all over the world electronically since they were 13 or 14 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't know how to cook, and they don't know anything about raising, you know, like taking care of kids, like not even like babysitting, right? They've never even done that. You know, and these young men, they've had their brains fried by marijuana and pornography, so that they're hardly capable of putting in an honest day's work, and let alone throwing a right cross, you know.
There you go. Absolutely.
And this was done on purpose. You know, this was not an accident. And they see that deficiency in themselves and they reject it, you know. So why are all these young men joining these active clubs? Is, well, they understand that, like, hey, as a man, you got to be able to throw a right cross. You know, not necessarily all the time, but sometimes.
No, but sometimes, yeah, I know a lot of these guys in these active clubs here in Alabama and Tennessee, Georgia, Mississippi, places like that. And I've worked out with some of them, even at my advanced age. I've told them to have mercy on me, but I started boxing when I was a teenager, and I still enjoy trying to do it a little bit. But I think these young guys have realized they've been sold a bill of goods, and once you show them that, hey, yeah, it's okay to learn to fight. You know, it's okay to be a defender of your women folk and the weak. And they take to it like a duck to water because it's a natural thing for them to do. And I've seen young men transformed. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. When we went to Charlottesville back in 2017, I had about a dozen shields made because I'd seen what had happened with Antifa and Black Lives Matter out in Berkeley and places like that. I knew how violent it was probably going to be. I knew we needed some protection for the front ranks if we were going to be trying to get into a park. So I had about a dozen shields made, and obviously I gave most of those shields to young big guys that would be, I knew would be able to handle the situation. But there were two or three young men who were of slight build, and I took a chance and I gave them the opportunity to be in the shield wall, as it were. And they'd never been in situations like this before. I don't think any of them had actually ever been in a fight. And they acquitted themselves very well. They're like men, as the Bible says. And when that was over, I talked to each of them, and it had transformed them because they had done something that they had never been able to do before, never been given the opportunity, never been encouraged to do this. And they had done it well. They had survived it. Their whole lives were transformed by that one day when somebody had confidence in them to give them a shield and say, go face the enemy.
Well, and that's the, you said an hour, and I don't want to be abusive of your time. I want to thank you very much for being here, but I'll never forget it. I believe we talked privately about this, but the image of the face of the Robert E. Lee statue hot to the point of melting will haunt me till the end of my days.
Oh gosh, I can still see that in my mind right now.
Yeah, I can close my eyes and just see it. And Robert E. Lee was not only a great man, but a great Christian. And a society that honors him is a society that honors God, and a society that honors Martin Luther King is a society that rejects God, plain and simple. And in Charlottesville in 2017, y'all weren't just defending a Robert E. Lee statue. You were defending everything good, true, and beautiful in the history of the world. Because the same, and for this reason, if you hate Robert E. Lee, you hate William Faulkner, you hate William Shakespeare, you hate Socrates, you hate Aristotle, you hate Plato, you hate the Bible, you hate, you know, whatever it is you think is, you hate Mozart, because you're fundamentally rejecting Western civilization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we knew that.
And the League, to its great credit, understood that and said, you know, like, we're going to, well, by God, we'll at least fight today. We won't be cowards. And, you know, this show is primarily aimed at Christians who understand the religious problem and you understand the political side of things. And that is, you know, ladies and gentlemen, liberalism is a totalizing ideology. It's a religion of, in and of itself. And you can either be a Christian or you can be a liberal, but you can't be both. And if you're going to reject liberalism as such, then you need to get on board with the anti-liberal politics that understood the stakes. You know, Jacobins, Red Republicans, atheists versus Christian, you know.
Absolutely, and there's no neutral position to take.
Right, to be neutral is to side with the devil.
Absolutely, to be neutral is to side with the devil himself. And I've told people for years. I said, you try to sit on the fence, stand in the middle of the road, whatever euphemism you want to use for not taking a stand on one side or the other, and you're going to be despised by both sides, and you're going to end up hating yourself for being a coward. So choose your side.
Yeah, well,
As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I believe I read that in the scriptures.
Amen. Amen, sir. Amen to that.
As for you know, your 30 years or more of advocacy for a Christian civilization, a Western civilization, I want to thank you personally. And where can people find you, Dr. Hill?
Well, we had to shut the League of the South down because of all the legal struggles we've been to. I couldn't morally or actually physically keep the League going with a judgment hanging over our heads, because I knew that every dollar that I took in dues or donations would be subject to seizure. So we shut down the League of the South and we formed the Southern Nationalist League back in October. And we have a really, really good professionally done website. And you can find that at, now listen closely, it's kind of tricky. Southern, SOUTHERNAT, League, SouthernAtLeague.com, SOUTHERNAT, LEAGUE.com. It's a professionally done website. And we're very proud of it. You can find us there, and you can find my contact information. Get in touch with me in the office, and I'll be glad to chat with you, answer any questions you have, or send you information about the organization and membership in it. So we're very proud of our service over the past 30 years, and we intend to go on until there is no fight left to fight, or the good Lord deprives us of breath and ammo, as it were, to fight this fight. So we're here for the duration.
Well, God bless you, and may God bless the South. Deo Vindice, sir, thank you very much for being here. For Fundamental Principle, I am Jerome, signing out.
It is my pleasure, sir. Thank you.